The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Welcome to NFL Live. Across our country, the sports world has come to a halt with the purpose of seeking justice in the aftermath of the shooting of Jacob Blake. On Tuesday, the Lions canceled practice to protest continued police violence against Black Americans. Yesterday, the Bucks sacrificed their playoff game against the Magic for change. Other sports followed suit. Woj is reporting the NBA players have decided to resume the playoffs even as soon as tomorrow. Many NFL practice fields are empty today as the players around the league come together with the quest for real change. The words and actions of athletes continue to be powerful as Jacob Blake and his family grapple with the reality that he'll need a miracle to walk again. Keyshawn Johnson, Dan Orlovsky, I'm Laura Rutledge. We have Adam Schefter and Marcus Spears with us as well. Woj will join us later with some updates from the NBA side. Let's get to what's going on the field or not going on, depending on where you are. Nine NFL teams canceled football activities today. The Bears, Broncos, Cardinals, Chargers, Colts, Jets, Packers, Titans, and the Washington football team all made the decision to not hold practice, with many of them spending time holding team meetings to discuss social justice plans. Many NFL players took to Twitter to share their thoughts on recent events. Le'Veon Bell tweeted, "We've been protecting the shield. It's time for the shield to protect us." Joe Burrow tweeted, "How can you hear the pain Black people are going through and dismiss it as nothing? How can you hear the pain and respond with anything other than, I stand with you?" Burrow's top wide receiver, AJ Green, was asked about the quarterback's words.
This podcast is proud to be supported by Jets Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jets is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to JetsPizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jets' signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jets Pizza. Better because it has to be. Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-hour energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5hourenergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5hourenergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
Oh, man. That's what you want to see. You want to see that quarterback position step up because those are guys that drive our league. And when you have guys like that stepping up at that young of an age and really haven't shown anything in the NFL yet, it speaks volumes, especially to the guys in the locker room. Being a white male, he's speaking up for, you know, what we're trying to create. And when you have a guy like that, you know, you just want to rally behind him.
Lots of commentary from around the NFL to get to, and we will get to that today. But, Adam, what's been the reaction across the NFL today?
Laura, this is a continuation of conversations that have gone on through the spring and into the summer with each incident of racial injustice that we've seen on videotape. And I think teams and coaches and players are trying to figure out how to turn words into actions. There were people up last night, one head coach I know, who said he spent the night thinking about what he could say to his team that he hasn't already said, what they could do to affect change, not just speak words, not just have messages. And I think this is a situation where the more I look at it, the more I admire coaches and front office members and players who have stepped up so bravely and courageously to try to take a stand in a way that other people have not. Where are politicians? Where are community leaders? Where are the people who are supposed to be making these laws when, in fact, these players and coaches and members of football teams and sports organizations are stepping forward to do the work of other people in addition to the jobs that they're doing?
Marcus, the news that the Bucks would protest and not play broke on our show right around this time yesterday. And I realize that so many, including myself, can't exactly understand what it's like to be in a black man's shoes, especially when violence against black men continues to happen. So what can you say about the voices in sports and in the sports world over the last 24 hours?
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the upcoming draft, the playoff intensity, and finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sports book bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the upcoming draft, the playoff intensity, and finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sports book bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Yeah, Els, it's vitally important that these guys continue to not only speak out, but plan and go and do. And like Adam said, the onus shouldn't be on them, but it falls on their shoulders because you got certain people that won't do anything about it. But here's the thing. I was thinking about this. As we've been getting ready and preparing for this show all day and looking at all of the coverage over ESPN platforms and listening to people talk, my question is, where are the owners? Where are the 32 guys that really make this league? The billionaire guys that have these relationships and ties to people in Washington and really influential people that can create change. The NFL lobbies for other things. Let's lobby for this. And I'm to that point now. Like, what's the movement? Where is the movement? The real movement is the decision makers, the taste makers, the people that make and develop laws and put them into action. That's where we are now. That's the situation we're in. We can continue to have this conversation every single day on every single platform and boycott and do all of these things. I'm waiting to hear from you, 32 owners in the NFL. What is your plan of action? Your players are speaking out. NBA owners, your players are speaking out. It's time for one of them to show up in front of a camera and lead in a direction where people need to see things go. That's where my mind is right now.
I know you said 24 hours, right? Mm-hmm. It's been way less than 24 hours for me because when it broke on the show yesterday and you start to think about it, and remember, I'm up at 3 o'clock in the morning for radio, so my sleep pattern was completely thrown off, just up all night long thinking about the Bucks, the other teams, what's going to happen? Are they going to try to play? Are they not going to try to play? If the NFL is going to be involved, what are the NFL owners going to decide to do? What about the NBA? So my brain has been like scrambled eggs all day long about this. And so when you look at it, you say to yourself, okay, you take a step back from it and you look at what the NBA has decided to do, which was move forward, but not just listen to talk. Actually see action in words, Dan, and that is the important thing. You can't just start to say, well, we're going to get to it, we'll think about it, and nothing happens. Mm-hmm. And I think as long as we continue to keep pushing the message and not let it die, then we're going to get some action along the way. These things do not happen overnight. That is for sure. It's going to take time, but along the way, you could keep chopping away at the brick until it's completely gone.
I kind of want to like piggyback off of that and kind of touch on something that Marcus hit with like the owners, right? Because what's happened over certainly the last couple of months, but certainly yesterday, made me think of this song. There's this song, the title of the song is called Together. It's by Kirk Franklin, Tori Kelly, and King & Country. And I wanted to write down the words so I shared them correctly. It says, if you're looking for hope tonight, raise your hand. If you're feeling alone and don't understand, if you're fighting the fight of your life, then stand. We're going to make it through this hand in hand. And if we fall, we will fall together. And I think what we've kind of witnessed is the community of pro sports really grouping together, player-wise, and certainly a ton of coaches-wise, and saying, we're going to walk this walk together. And I think it's great to watch the black community stand up and go, there's people in our community that don't have a voice, and that's no longer the case. We're going to be the voice for them. We don't want you to look at us as your pro athlete. Don't look at us as the 1%. We're in this together. And Marcus is right. The pro sports players, they need those owners now. Like, the owners got to come grab hand in hand and walk, like you're saying, Key, but no longer words, action, right? And I'm hopeful that that happens very quickly.
Yeah, and Marcus, one of the things that continues to be, I think, a big piece of this is that until the white people, whether it's white owners, but it's beyond that as well, until they feel the same pain that the black community is going through, how will change really happen? Can you just expound on that?
Yeah, Els, you and I have had conversations about this. I've talked to Dan, and listen, I think this is vitally important to say. Black people don't want white people of goodwill to feel guilty about what's transpiring. I want you to stand with this. This is a community. We're talking about a human rights issue. I cannot stress that enough. Black people have bared the brunt of a lot of systems in this country that were not designed or built for them to have success. That is the reality. Nobody is saying that to hurt your feelings. We see it every day. For the inconvenience of hearing us come on these shows, for the people that say that and talk about these things that are transpiring in this country, think about going through that your entire life and dealing with that every single day. So it's not for anybody of goodwill to feel guilty about. Here's the problem, though, Laura. You look across the landscape, and every time something comes up, it's always nuanced. It's always you decide and determine what side you own, and everybody finds reasons to feel good about the silos that they're in. The bottom line is this. We are losing human life to people that are supposed to protect and serve, and it does not look like there is justice involved when it is done wrongfully. That is the issue. So it's a lot of issues, but the one we're talking about right now is everybody treated with the same level of respect.
Yeah, let's pick a side that values human life. That shouldn't be too hard to do. Patrick Mahomes and Deshaun Watson, they're just 2 weeks away from opening the NFL season against each other. And there's no way of knowing how all of these teams and individual players will make statements. But Keyshawn, I want to start with you. Do you expect a big name player like a Mahomes, for instance, to boycott week one games?
I don't necessarily know if they'll boycott, but I think you could expect their voices to be heard and louder. They're going to sit down, I'm sure, with the powers that be, which are their owners and their head coaches and general managers and presidents of teams, and try and figure out how to get things resolved. Once the NBA made the decision to come back and play, it kind of took a little bit of the NFL players' steam away from deciding to boycott and not play football as well. But I do believe that there'll be a number of high-profile players on both sides, black and white, that will step up with loud voices.
We saw this 2 days ago with the Lions, right? Like, the Lions decided we're going to skip practice or we're going to postpone practice. And then the question became, what's next? And now we saw 9 teams today decide to not practice. And so this is only going to continue to be a giant conversation. I would expect anything. Pete Carroll said this yesterday. Anything is on the table. And so you're going to see the NFL, I would imagine, both player, organization, coach, front offices, be proactive. How can they actually utilize what's going on right now for actual change? And I think that the players will be smart. The superstar players will be smart with how they can use the platform and the momentum to actually change. I think Jaylen Brown said this with the Celtics, right? If the NBA was going to leave, what were you going to go home and do? I think the NFL conversation is, if you're going to do that, what is the benefit in comparison to what if we do stand together? can happen.
Yeah, many of these players at the NFL level, at the NBA level too, so young, and there's so much weight that's on their shoulders, Marcus, so much responsibility for these young black men and white men, but especially the young black men. Can you speak to that responsibility and maybe the responsibility for some of these star players to make the statements that society, that their peers, that everyone is kind of expecting from them?
It's funny, Els, you asked me that question, and as I was listening to Keyshawn and Dan talk, my grandmother told me something when I was growing up, going through high school, and my football career was starting to be known by people. She said, you got three heavy burdens. The one is you're going to be a black man in this country. And there's some things that come along with that that you can't control, but you have to be strong enough to deal with the things that are going to come your way. She said, the second thing is you have to make sure that you do everything in your humanly possible to take care of a family once you decide to have one. And the third thing she told me that you had to do is you make sure that people that can't pull themselves up, you use your ability, talents, and whatever you may gain to help pull them up. She told me that was the three keys to life for me growing up in this country. When I listened to you guys talk about Patrick Mahomes and Deshaun Watson, I don't want people to think that this is a light burden to bear. We are talking about young men that haven't really even experienced life yet. Dan and Keyshawn and I, we sit on this stage and we have families. We understand what it's like to sacrifice. A lot of these guys haven't even reached that point yet. So whatever decision they make, if it's in the best interest of what they believe in their heart for, what they want to see get accomplished, I support them with that. I don't want to pick apart if they should boycott or not. I don't want to pick apart if they should decide not to play. Whatever they decide to do, I'm going to applaud those young men because I think they are instilling the third principle my grandmother told me. They are going to try to lift people up using their platform and the things that they've been blessed with. And as long as they do that, they could play all the football they want to play. They could do whatever. They could boycott as much as they want to boycott. But I believe knowing those two guys and having a conversation with both of them before, that we are in great position to see them use their platforms like everybody tell young black men to do when they get a chance to play in these leagues.
Yeah, their voices are amplified and may give a voice to the voiceless.
It started during our first meeting. Coach Patricia did a good job of just opening up the floor for dialogue. We had a great conversation. People, you know, shared experiences. We had run-ins with police officers. I mean, we had a black player talk about how when he gets into the car and, you know, he's riding, he sees a police officer, he's lower his music. He turns the volume down. And then, you know, a white player talked after that how he has no worries. He doesn't even think about lowering his music. From that moment, like, everybody sees it's not the same for white people. So it just shows in different interactions that we've all had with police.
Back here on NFL Live, 9 NFL teams decided to cancel practice today. The Bears, Broncos, Cardinals, Chargers, Colts, Jets, Packers, Titans, and Washington. Out in Indianapolis today, the team used their time as a chance to, quote, discuss and make work toward making a lasting social impact and inspiring change in our communities. This morning, Keyshawn, J. Will, and Zubin had NFL Executive Vice President of Football Operations Troy Vincent on their show. His raw emotion has already impacted many. Take a listen.
Many are there, Key, and I must say in full transparency, many are not because they think it's a disruption of the business. It can't be any clearer. How do we address this together? We need your influence as an owner. We need you to bridge the gap for us. We need you to talk to the DA. We need to have conversations with your local state officials.
So that was Troy Vincent's response to a question that you asked him, Keyshawn, about the owners. Just give us a little bit more context to the power dynamic in the NFL and where you think the owners stand and should stand on all of this.
Well, you heard Troy right there. Troy talked about there's some that really at the end of the day, they don't give a damn. Because all they care about is what are we going to get on the bottom line. We want to stay away from it. There's some. They're not all bad guys as far as that go, you know. And so when you look at it, The players have got to get to those dudes and really get them to feel the pain on the bottom line and understand that you got to help us. If you want to continue to have this revenue stream that you have soaring at high levels, you got to help us. Because if it wasn't for us getting on the field and doing those things, you wouldn't be making that type of money. And we need you to step up with some of your big-time friends in law, some of your governors and some of the mayors at the lower level, and talk to them about doing some police reform, doing some things that's going to help our communities. It's not just about writing a check to a foundation and going back on your yachts and your big houses and things like that. It's about really getting out there. One thing that I said this morning is that until it hits you at home, you won't feel it. And they think it at some point, they really think it might not ever hit them. It may not hit them with the police, but it might hit them with something else.
Yeah, really quickly, I want to follow up. You said police reform would be an actionable item. Is there anything else that's on the top of your mind that these owners could do?
It's so many things, Delora, that it's a long laundry list of things. You know, you got police reform, voter rights in different states. You know, you think about the things that's going on or went on in the past over in Wisconsin from a voter situation. You just, all of those sort of things, get with each other. The L.A. Dodgers and LeBron James have gotten together, and they're using Dodger Stadium for people to go vote. Get with your stadiums. I haven't heard any owner step up to the plate and say, hey, you can use my 80,000-seat facility for those things. It's like they're scared to make a move because they think they're going to lose some money.
If I'm an owner, I want to come out to my players and say, hey, this is my plan. This is our organization's plan. This is what we're going to do. This is how we are going to be part of the rectification, right? This is how we're going to fix things. And if it doesn't happen, then the players have to go to the owner and go, what are you going to do? Like, what are you doing to help change? Because you either do it yourself as the owner, you get out proactively, or you're going to have your players be reactive to it right now.
You got to continue to push it, though.
Right. Yeah.
You cannot settle.
You're talking players.
Players. You can't push the owners. Some owners are going to try to get pushback. The great thing about what Troy was saying is Troy's in the building.
Right.
He's getting firsthand information, so he knows who he's dealing with. He understands those guys. So he's able, like he said, in full disclosure, tell the situation what it is. Mm-hmm. He's not hiding from it.
Marcus, you began the show challenging the owners and saying that you wanted answers from them. You've been nodding your head as these guys have been talking. What more do you want to add to this?
Man, number one, just listening to Key and Dan and you, Laura, I have so much respect for y'all. I mean, this is a difficult topic to talk about. The one thing I thought about, too, when Key said something, which I think is vitally important, man, we talk about this all the time. And, Laura, you and I have actually done this when you've been in Baton Rouge. I wonder how many of these owners have ever been to the places that some of their players or majority of their players grow up. I wonder if they really understand the type of situations these guys are coming from. And being first-generation college guys and having the first guys to ever make a substantial amount of money to try to get their families out of these situations. Because really, empathy starts when you in the mix, like Keyshawn just said, when you feel it, right? And look, for as much as I would love to have the great feelings and all of that. I grew up in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. There is a staunch difference, Laura can attest, between North Baton Rouge, where I grew up for half of my life, and South Baton Rouge around LSU campus. Around LSU campus, it'll fool you. You'll think everybody doing well and it's affluent and this city is vibrant and going. And then you take a 15-minute ride north and you realize, oh, this is where the black people stay, because that's what they say. And these are the things, these are the places that these players coming from, like myself, like Keyshawn, like guys in this league that's talking about what they go through when they have police interactions. And we're not just talking about guys getting shot. We're not just talking about, I've seen in my neighborhood police brutalize guys. I've seen guys be slammed on cars. I've seen guys being racially profiled. I've been racially profiled. These things are transpiring. So it goes back to this for me. If these owners really want to understand, if people really want to understand, go and see some of these neighborhoods. Go and see the poverty that strickens communities, that makes young black men act out, and they don't see any place to go. Go into these neighborhoods and talk to these families that have had generations of trying to get out. Go see the pressure on these pro athletes that's put on by these communities they come from to come back and help and try to give them some type of hope and future. These burdens are not new, but these burdens need to be thrown on the lap of the people that have never experienced this. And that's what came to mind when I heard you guys talking about the owners need to feel this and be out front.
Yeah, very well said by you guys here. Let's get to a little bit more of the news, and then we'll get back to our discussion on the show. Just one day ago, three NBA playoff games were postponed after the Milwaukee Bucks protested by not taking the court for their playoff game between the Orlando Magic. And after player and coaches met last night, the remainder of the NBA season was left hanging in the balance. And so now we welcome in Adrian Wojnarowski from Orlando with Adam Schefter here to join our conversation. Woj, let's start with you. You're reporting today that the NBA would resume the playoffs, but so much has happened over the last 24 hours. What can you tell us about what's happening right now with the NBA's plans to resume?
Laura, right now the Players Association and the league are discussing when they will resume. I'm told that very likely the playoffs will be back on Saturday. There was still some discussion about playing as soon as tomorrow, but it appears Saturday. And then there'll be another call later in the afternoon between the Players Association and owners to talk about really some action items about moving forward to put more into play with the issues of social injustice. And listen, this has been a conversation and really a partnership with the players and the league going back to the discussions about coming into the bubble. You know, they have partnered on a number of items and initiatives, and they want to continue that conversation beyond the restart, beyond into the playoffs, as more eyes are watching the NBA as we get deeper in this postseason. And that's important for the players, that they're not just playing, you know, in the words of a player, Mark Spears, my colleague, talked to, we aren't here to just crown a champion.
Well, it was very interesting, the news coming out of Orlando yesterday, because you had to figure that every professional sports league, the NFL included, is watching exactly what the NBA players are doing at that point in time. And I felt like today, if it had gone a different way and the season had been canceled or permanently postponed, it felt like to me that the NFL and other leagues could follow suit. Is there any sense among NBA players that they are leading the way here, that they are setting an example for other sports, that they are the first big domino with everybody watching them to see what will happen, and that they help set the tone for the entire country?
No, Adam, it's a good question. I do think there's a sense of that. Even coming into the bubble, to be, you know, along with the NHL, a major sport who came into a bubble, other sports have talked about it. Some are still looking at the possibility, you know, baseball maybe doing it in the postseason. But this was a great experiment on a lot of levels, starting with the virus and keeping it out of the bubble, allowing play to continue without players being infected. But also, it's a social experiment. And there is a great deal of stress, and the time that the players have been in here away from their families. Listen, it's not easy. And, you know, that's been part of the challenge here also. And listen, the Milwaukee Bucks, when they made this decision in their locker room prior to game 5 against Orlando yesterday, I'm not sure they totally expected to see the domino effect that came after, not just with other teams in the league, but also other sports.
Yeah, you wonder, guys, even if they realize the impact that they're having outside of the bubble. It's probably, you know, easy to just sit there in the bubble and think about what's going on around them, but the impact was so powerful outside of that. We're going to leave that right here. Thanks, Shefty, and thank you, Woj, for all that information. Before we head to break, I want you to watch this powerful moment from Ryan Tannehill, surrounded by his teammates today.
Tired of dealing with the systematic oppression, we're tired of dealing with excessive force, we're tired of seeing black men and women die in situations where they should be walking home and spending the night with their families. It's sickening, And there's really, it's sickening to just know that they have to worry about their kids coming home at night. So we stand up here together, united, demanding change, that there's equality and justice for all those situations. Thank you.
More powerful words from the NFL community. The Chargers displaying this quote from Jacob Blake's sister after he was shot by police. "I'm not sad. I don't want your pity. I want change." The Chargers later announced their scrimmage today in that new stadium was canceled. You see there, Saints cornerback Janoris Jenkins posting that photo of his helmet with the name Jacob Blake. The entire Saints team had Blake's name on their helmets today. And in Pittsburgh, rookie receiver Chase Claypool posted a screenshot of a text from his dad that reads, "Chase, please don't drive fast. Don't get pulled over. The cops might kill you." The fear that you hear in the voices and see in the words of Black Americans is heartbreaking. Troy Vincent spoke about the added difficulty of protecting his three sons.
I think about my three boys. Dang it. And I'm sitting up here every day having conversation about contact tracing and are we going to play ball? And I got a 22-year-old and a 20-year-old and a 15-year-old. And I'm trying to prevent from being hunted.
That sound from Keyshawn, J. Will, and Zubin's radio show this morning. Marcus, you have three children, one of them a son. Keyshawn, you have five children, two of them sons. Marcus, as a parent, how does this impact you?
Oh, it's impactful. You know, I've cried a lot of tears. I've cried on national television on Get Up. Talking about this because it's one of the hardest things you have to do. But you realize as a Black father that you have to do it. There's a different protocol for when your son could possibly be not only pulled over, but in the wrong place, at the wrong time, and in his mind, in the right place. These are conversations that we have to have. This is not a figment of Black men's imagination. This is not us being overly hyped, sensitive to having to have these discussions with our sons. It's the reality, and our daughters. So when you have a talk, this is how it goes. When you have a talk, the George Floyd situation, my son asked me, "Dad, why didn't they get up off of George Floyd's neck?" And I told him, I said, "There are some people, man, that won't like you because of the color of your skin." And that you see the brain of that young man, my son, start to try to register, like, what you mean? I'm playing Nike League basketball and baseball, and I got white friends, and I spend the night over at their house. Like, what is this new world you're trying to tell me about? And then you got to reinforce, like, son, this is what you have the high potential of facing as you grow up in this country. There's a high chance that you will have a run-in with a police officer that won't like you because of how you look. He'll already have a perception of what you are and how you're going to address him. So these conversations are real. And the hard part is when you listen to Troy, right? And I've said this before, and Keyshawn, we reached a certain level where we could live in gated communities and we could insulate our children from a lot of these things that go on, because that's what our plan was to do, for them not to grow up and have to deal with the things that we dealt with. But then you realize they still ain't safe. It still happened in the Black kids in affluent areas. It's still happening all over this country. So the conversation is tough, it's hard, it's emotional, but it's one that you have to have. And I've come to the place now where it's no longer a part of emotional for me. It's about making sure that my son, if he ever has an interaction with a policeman that doesn't like him because of the color of his skin, don't give him any reason to think that you're a threat. And that's unfortunate. It's unfortunate that sometimes you may have to lose your dignity in these moments, but I need you to come home to Pops, man.
Now, that is absolutely true, Dan and Laura. When you think about it, though, so I have two kids. I have 22-year-old Keyshawn Jr., and then I have Vance, who's 8. Let's talk about Keyshawn for a minute. College kid, likes to hang out, likes to do things, party, all that. It's college. And I had to always explain to him and tell him, say, look, man, whatever you do, don't be out too late. And if you are, if you get pulled over by the police, here's what I need you to do. It's okay. So I thought, because this is what my mom always told me, to pull into a gas station, lit up, cameras everywhere, go into a grocery store parking lot where there's a lot of people. So I thought that that was the way to go, because 20 years ago, if you had a camera, nowadays it doesn't matter. But do everything to protect yourself. Speak to them well. If they tell you to put your hands outside the windows, roll the damn windows down immediately and stick both hands outside the window. Don't panic. Don't do anything. And that is true to this day. I don't talk back. Don't say anything. Make sure that you do everything you're supposed to, because they're looking for a reason. And I don't want them to be scared of the police, but then I got an 8-year-old kid who's afraid of sirens. It could be the ambulance, it could be the police, it could be Vance thinks they're coming after us. They're coming after us. I just had a conversation with him in the car the other day as I'm driving through Brooklyn. Craziest thing for an 8-year-old, and he's very smart, very smart. He asked me and his mother, who happens to be white, what is slavery? She couldn't answer it, really. I had to try to answer it best I could for an 8-year-old, but that's the conversation that you got to continue to have. He's mixed. He wants to know why people talk to him a certain way at school at times. All of those different things, you got to have a conversation with him. Got to let him know. Don't be afraid, but understand. Don't be afraid, just understand what it is. And that's, it hurts your heart to have that conversation. But you do, and I got a daughter that I have to have a conversation with to let her know. Not as intense as my son's, and this is something that happens all the time. This is not a one-time conversation. This is especially now. Yeah. Because they're seeing everything, whether it's on his computer, whether it's listening to me, whether it's all of a sudden I'm watching television and the news and he comes into a room. And you know how kids are, they gonna come into the room. And even though they're not, you tell them, get out of here, I'm watching something that's adult. They're hearing everything through them thin walls. And it is nerve-wracking to know that.
Yeah.
And at some point in time, he's going to grow up and he's gonna be a man. And I don't want him to be fearful of him, but when you're looking at it every day on television and you see George Floyd, you see Blake, and you see these sort of things continuing to happen, what am I supposed to do? What am I supposed to do?
It's a seemingly impossible balance to strike as a parent. I can't even imagine having to have those conversations. Marcus, I heard you saying something, so just want to make sure that you didn't have anything else to add.
Well, yeah, Laura, I think, you know, you and I, me and Key are talking about this, and as you know, my sister is a police officer, and, you know, she tells me all the time, number one job of a police officer is to de-escalate situations. And I find myself all the time, like, these guys have a tremendously hard job. Don't get me wrong. I understand it from that standpoint, too. But the training, the position you chose, the things that you have to deal with, it's your job to de-escalate these situations, man. And I know that's not as easy as said than done, but that is your responsibility to not let these things get to the point, not act out of fear, and create some discourse between you and the people that you are policing, protecting, and serving, that you don't have these situations where when you go into them, you don't know the community that you're dealing with. But that's a whole nother conversation for a whole nother day. I just want people to know what Key and I just said. That's the reality of being a black man in America.
Yeah, we appreciate both of you so much for sharing your hearts and your personal stories. That's never easy to do. New into NFL Live right now, Steelers head coach Mike Tomlin explaining his decision to practice today.
We didn't give any real consideration to not practicing today. In regards to what we're doing with today and tomorrow, we're just leaning in on this process. I continue to appreciate the hearts and spirits of our players in terms of wanting to participate and get and engage in a positive way and express themselves. That is their right. Like I've said many times, they'll continue to be supported by us as long as their efforts are done so thoughtfully and with class.
You heard Tomlin, Dan Orlovsky mentioning thoughtful efforts and with class. What can an NFL locker room, a sports locker room in general, do to instruct society about potential change?
Just break down barriers. You know, listen, I'm a white kid from a small town in Connecticut. Most of my childhood was spent around white people. And then I went to play college football and then played in the NFL. Most of my adult life was spent around black people. And what happened during my time around the black community was a lot of the lies or poison or stereotypes about the black community that I had kind of like subconsciously picked up as a kid, I realized weren't true. And I realized how many good, loyal, kind, hardworking, intelligent, diligent, incredible black people there are in the black community. And without sports, I don't know if I have that experience. Without sports, I don't know if I realize those were lies. And I think we need that. I think everyone needs to experience something like I was so fortunate to experience.
You know, and that's true. Had the same, flip it for me. Had I not been, you know, growing up around mainly black, had a certain viewpoint about white society. But as time went on, going to USC, living in certain places, you're like, oh, yeah, I ain't worried about that. It's not everybody.
Right.
Yeah. It's not everybody.
Right. Marcus, go ahead.
Dan, just courage, man. I applaud you for that, man, because that's where it starts. It starts with realizing, you know what, man, this was something that I thought was a certain way. And whether sports forced you into that, you learned. And that's what we should be trying to do as opposed to trying to figure out what silo we want to hang out in. Let's be human people. Let's be humans, man. Take care of each other, period.
Thank you all for this conversation today. We're NFL Live. We'll be back on ESPN tomorrow at the same time.